The warehouse and central offices were just north of Bordentown. It was a private company owned by Chester Billings. He wasn't exactly squeaky clean. He'd been charged with income tax evasion 3 years ago, but he'd settled up and nothing more had come of it. He'd also been charged with possession of stolen goods, but nothing had come of that either. I plugged Chester Billings into a new search program that would give me some personal history. He was born in New Brunswick. Parents were Mary and William Billings, sister Brenda. Holy cow. Brenda. I put Brenda Schwartz into the same search program and read down. There it was. Brenda Billings, brother Chester. Okay, so I'd finally made a connection, and it was interesting, but I still had no idea why the photograph was important, or for that matter, what I had to do to get everyone off my back. I shut my computer down, took a shower, got dressed, and headed out. Lancer and Slasher fell in line behind me on Hamilton and followed me all the way. We parked in front of the bonds office, and I walked back to talk to them. I know who you work for, I said to Lancer.
I didn't tell you, he said.
No, I found out on my own.
I guess it's okay, then.
You don't seem especially motivated to beat information out of me, I said.
We're following orders, Lancer said. We keep our eye on you and report back where you go and who you talk to.
Razzle Dazzle is more aggressive. Lancer snorted.
He's a freak. He used to hang out at the casino until they kicked him out. He had a way of getting the slots to pay out. Works for some Somali nutcase. Used to brag about how he could cut off a finger with a single slash with his knife.
Connie, Lula, and Vinny were standing at silent attention when I walked into the office. What's going on? I asked.
We're listening, Connie said. Do you hear that?
I cocked my head and listened. What am I supposed to be hearing?
They're squeaking, Connie said. They're having a meeting.
Who?
The rats.
Oh, boy.
I don't hear them no more, Lula said. I'm not sure I ever heard them. I think the squeaking might have been Vinny wheezing.
I don't wheeze, Vinny said. I'm the picture of health.
Things to do, people to see, I said. There's a warehouse I need to check out by Bordentown.
They got good shopping at a flea market there, Lula said. I wouldn't mind going with you.
I wasn't planning on shopping.
Yeah, but you never know when the urge might hit you, Lula said. They got a kick-ass rib place there, too.
Chapter 23 I ditched Lancer and Slasher in Midtown Trenton and got onto Broad. We picked Route 295 up in Whitehorse and went south.
I'm feeling like those guys aren't trying real hard to tail you, Lula said. Seems to me they don't got a lot of motivation.
They're security guards who got promoted beyond their level of incompetence.
Why are we going to look at this warehouse?
Lancer and Slasher are employed by a guy named Chester Billings. Billings owns a gourmet food distribution company and his warehouse is in Bordentown. Turns out Brenda Schwartz is his sister.
Wow, Lula said. What's all that mean?
Having a clue.
So we're going poking around his warehouse?
Not so much poking around as riding by. I'd like to get a sense of the operation. The Billings warehouse and office was in a light industrial park. I found the service road and wound my way through the complex, finally coming to Billings Gourmet Food at the end of a cul-de-sac. The buildings were relatively new. Grounds were minimally landscaped but neat. The office was attached to the warehouse. Maybe 2,000 square feet for the office. A lot more for the warehouse. Large parking lot. I drove around back to see the loading docks. Two loading docks and two roll-up garage doors. Woods behind. I thought about the charge of receiving stolen goods. He had the perfect setup. Okay, I said. I've seen enough. Lula looked at me.
That's it?
Yep.
We rode all the way down here to do this? You don't want to go in or nothing?
Nope. What would I say to Big Bad Chester Billings? I haven't got the photograph, but I'm pretty sure the guy looked like either Tom Cruise or Ashton Kutcher, and I'd appreciate it if you'd leave me alone. I couldn't see Chester Billings having a sense of humor about that message.
I got the ribs place programmed into my phone, Lula said, just in case you're interested.
90 minutes and 10 pounds later, we were back on the road.
That was excellent, Lula said. Nothing like lunching on ribs and fries and all that other shit to make me feel like a new woman.
I'd had absolutely no self-control. I'd eaten everything that was put in front of me, with the exception of the napkin, and I felt like two new women.
"What wild goose chase we going on next?" Lula asked.
"I want to break into Brenda's house."
"Now you're talking. Wham! What about the nosy neighborhood and the fact it's daylight?"
"We'll be in disguise."
"A covert operation," Lula said. "I like it."
I drove back to Trenton, stopped at my mom's house, and borrowed a mop, a bucket, and a cleaning caddy filled with a bunch of cleaning products.
"This here's sexist," Lula said. "Why do we have to be cleaning ladies?"
"Because we look like cleaning ladies. Do you have a better idea?"
"I was just saying. No need to get huffy. Usually we're hoes when we go undercover. I'm good at being a hoe."
"I didn't think hoe would work here."
"I guess you got a point."
I found Brenda's little greenhouse, and I parked in the driveway. We went to the front door and rang the bell. No answer. I felt around the door jamb for a key. Nothing. I scanned the ground for fake dog poop or a fake rock. Nada. We carted our buckets and mops to the back and tried the back door. Locked. I lifted the doormat and looked under. There was the key. We opened the back door and walked into the kitchen. A couple bowls and coffee mugs in the sink. A box of cereal on the counter.
"What are we looking for?" Lula asked me.
"I don't know."
"That makes it easy," Lula said.
It was a small traditional ranch, two bedrooms and one bath, crammed with furniture. Probably whatever Brenda had loaded on a truck before the foreclosure police padlocked her out of her former house. There was a picture on an end table in the living room of Brenda and a young man, her son, maybe. He was slim with shoulder-length brown hair, wearing jeans and ratty sneakers and a brown T-shirt. They looked happy. Brenda's bedroom was as expected, her closet stuffed with clothes, shoes lined up everywhere, a bureau crammed with undies, dressy T-shirts, sweaters. The top of the bureau loaded with hair products, nail polish, a professional makeup chest, a spice-scented candle. A jewelry chest containing costume jewelry. So far, no pictures of her and Crick. No engagement ring in the jewelry box. I moved to the bathroom. Medicine chest stuffed with over-the-counter decongestants, pain pills, laxatives, antacids, sleep aids, diet aids, some makeup scattered on one side of the sink, hairbrush, hairspray. Electric toothbrush, a second toothbrush, a small tube of toothpaste, razor and travel-size shave gel on the other side of the sink. Man stuff. Toilet seat up. Damp towel on the floor in front of the tub and shower. Definitely a guy here. The second bedroom was being used. Bed unmade, laptop on the bed. Men's flip-flops on the floor, along with tropical-themed boxer shorts. Backpack in the corner, partially stuffed with clothes. Nothing hanging in the closet. Nothing in the small chest of drawers.
"Somebody living with Brenda," Lula said.
"She has a 21-year-old son, Jason. I'm guessing he's visiting. Doesn't look like he's planning an extended stay."
"That's nice he's visiting his mama, though. It gotta be hard when your kid grows up and leaves."
I looked over at Lula. She never talked about kids. "Would you like to have kids someday?" I asked her.
"I don't think I can have kids," Lula said. "Remember, I was hurt when I was a hoe. I would have died if you hadn't found me and saved me."
"You could adopt."
"I don't know if anybody'd let me."
"You'd be a wonderful mom."
"I'd love the shit out of a kid," Lula said. "I'd try real hard. I never knew much about my own mom. She was a crackhead hoe, and she overdosed on heroin when I was young. I was a better hoe than her on account of I never did the drugs like that."
I walked out of the bedroom past a closet that held a washer and dryer. A few more steps down the hall, and I came to another door. I opened the door and peeked in. Garage. It looked like there was a car under a tarp. I switched the lights on, lifted the tarp, and gave a low whistle.
"That's a Ferrari," Lula said. "It's no ordinary Ferrari either. It's one of them special edition ones. This is a majorly expensive car. I bet Brenda has an orgasm driving this car."
"She doesn't drive this car," I said. "It hasn't got plates."
"Then I bet she has an orgasm sitting in it in the garage."
We grabbed our buckets and mops. I locked Brenda's house, and we got into my truck. "I'm tired of fooling around with this," I said to Lula. "This is bullshit. I'm going to Brenda, and I want answers."
"Wham," Lula said. "Kick ass."
I motored out of Brenda's neighborhood, took Route 1, and turned into the Hare Barns parking lot.
I'm coming with you, Lula said. I don't want to miss anything.
There won't be much to miss. I just want to talk to her.
Yeah, but if she won't talk, we'll rough her up.
We will not rough her up.
Geez Louise, Lula said. It's no wonder you go around in the dark all the time. You got a lot of rules.
Brenda was sitting in her styling chair when I walked into the salon.
You came back, she said. You decided to get something done with your hair, right?
Wrong, I said. We need to talk.
I don't need to talk anymore. I don't care about the photograph. You can keep it.
I don't have it.
Well, if you did have it, you could keep it, Brenda said. It's not important to me.
What about Richie?
Who?
Your dead fiancé?
Oh, yeah, poor Richie.
Talk to me about poor Richie. What was he doing with the photograph?
He just had it, okay? And then he didn't have it because he gave it to you.
Why did he give it to me?
That's a real good question. I think the answer is that he was an idiot.
There's more of an answer. Brenda stood.
I can't talk to you with that hair. It's disturbing. Look at your friend. She has amazing hair.
I glanced over at Lula. She looked like she was wearing a giant wad of cotton candy.
I take real good care of my hair, too, Lula said.
You don't take care of your hair, I told her. Every 4 days you dye your hair a different color. You have indestructible hair. If you set your hair on fire, nothing would happen to it.
I can't believe you two hang out together, Brenda said.
It's embarrassing sometimes, Lula said. She don't know much about dressing either.
Sit down here, Brenda said to me. I'll get you fixed up. I don't have any clients for the rest of the day.
Gee, thanks, but I don't think so, I said.
On the house, Brenda said.
It's not the money, I told her. I sort of like my hair the way it is.
Honey, your hair is no way, Brenda said.
She cut her eyes to Lula.
Am I right?
Yep, Lula said. You're right.
Brenda ran her fingers through my hair.
First thing you need highlights. Big, chunky highlights.
About the photograph?
Put a cape on and sit down while I mix this up, Brenda said. We can talk when I come back.
Heaven help me, I was going to have to let her give me highlights to get her to talk. I don't trust her, I said to Lula. She's crazy. What if she poisons my hair?
I'll go watch her, Lula said. I know what I'm doing when it comes to hair and pharmaceuticals. You just sit in the chair and don't worry about nothing.
They both came back after a couple minutes, and Brenda streaked gunk into my hair and wrapped it in foil.
It's no big deal about the photograph, Brenda said. I thought I needed it for a business transaction, but turns out it wasn't necessary.
What about your brother? Am I off a hook with him, too?
You know about Chester?
She shrugged.
I don't know what's going on with him, except he's an asshole. I'm not talking to him. He's only my half-brother, anyway. We found out my mother was doing the butcher.
She picked up a different bowl of glop and streaked and foiled new gunk alongside the previous gunk. I bit my lip and said a Hail Mary.
I can see this isn't going to be as interesting as I hoped, Lula said. Bitch slapping's unlikely, so I'm going to sit and catch up on all your trashy magazines.
You still haven't told me anything, I said to Brenda. Chester hired two guys to follow me around. Why? Who's the man in the photo?
The man is no one. It's a composite. You know, somebody's nose and someone else's eyes. It's done on a computer.
Tom Cruise and Ashton Kutcher.
I don't know. I never saw it, Brenda said. Anyway, it's real clever. It looks like a photograph, but it's a computer program. You scan it into a computer, and the computer breaks the picture up into little itty-bitty thingies and sees a code. And then you can use the code to do things, like open a car.
I don't get why that's so special. You can open a car with a key. You can open a car with a remote.
Yes, but this opens cars that have fancy doohickeys like GPS and security systems. You don't necessarily have to own the car to be able to unlock it, if you get my drift.
You could steal a car with this?
Exactly. And after you open the car, you can start the engine and do all kinds of things, like work the gas and brake and steering without being in the car.
Lula looked up from her magazine.
So I could use that photo to start any car I picked out of the lot and ram it through your plate glass window?
Maybe not any car, but I suppose, Brenda said.
Nice, Lula said,
and she went back to reading her magazine. I was beginning to understand the potential value of the photograph. It sounded like the photo held a program that enabled you to hack into the operating systems of cars remotely, You could use it to steal cars, or you could use it to drive an unmanned vehicle into another car, or pedestrian, or building. And if you filled the car with explosives, you'd have a remote-controlled bomb. Is this technology well-known? I asked.
I guess a lot of people know it's out there, but not many people have hold of it. It's, you know, cutting edge.
I thought about the Megabucks Ferrari sitting in Brenda's garage. You used it to steal a car, right?
I used it to get my car back. Do you know who Sammy the Pig is?
Sure, everyone in Jersey knows Sammy the Pig. He's famous. He runs a North Jersey mob.
Well, my genius husband, who is now dead, decided he wanted to expand his business, so he borrowed money from Sammy. We were doing just fine with 35 car washes and a big house and platinum credit cards. I didn't want him to expand, but would he listen to me? No. He wanted to be the car wash king. He wanted to go national. He wanted car washes on the moon. So he got money from Sammy, and he started building car washes. And all of a sudden, the economy is tanking, and people are washing their own friggin' cars. And then Bernie starts having construction problems and labor problems, and he can't keep up with his loan payments to Sammy. So, long story short, Sammy the Pig ended up owning Bernie's nuts. We lost everything. All the damn car washes, the house, the timeshare in Jamaica that we never used.
Everything. And 3 months ago, he took my car. He had no business taking the car. Bernie gave it to me for my birthday. Two of Sammy's guys came into the salon, took the keys out of my purse, and drove away with it.
What kind of car was it? I asked her, as if I didn't already know.
A Ferrari, red, and it was real expensive.
Why didn't you just go get it back?
I was never able to find the papers for it. Bernie's records were a mess by the time he offed himself, and the registration was in the car. And what am I going to say to the police? My husband was in bed with Sammy the Pig, and Sammy took my car to pay off the vig. Anyway, I sneaked over to Sammy's place and tried to steal my car back, but my key wouldn't work. It set off the alarm system, and the door wouldn't open. I guess the pig had a new lock put in. Probably had a new VIN put on, too. He's got a bunch of chop shops. The truth is, the car might have been hot even when I got it. Bernie won it in a poker game.
Brenda unrolled one of the foils and looked at my hair.
Still needs more time, she said.
But you got the car back, right? I asked her.
Yeah, I was complaining to this person I know, and he said he could override all the systems and get me my car. Only thing is, he was living in Hawaii, and he was worried about sending me information. So when my client Richie came in to get a haircut, and he said he was leaving for a conference in Hawaii, I had this brilliant idea that he could bring the information back for me.
Why didn't your friend just mail it to you?
He said it wasn't safe. Turned out this wasn't safe either. At least he was smart enough to do the photo thing. I guess you wouldn't want this code stuff to get into the wrong hands.
Like your brother?
Yeah, he'd probably sell it to the Russians or aliens from outer space or whoever the heck the enemy is. I can't keep up with it. Or he could keep it and use it to hijack shit.
I looked at myself in the mirror and tried not to grimace. This was more than I'd expected. My whole head was covered in foil. Here's the big question, I said to Brenda. Why did Richard Crick put the photo in my bag?
It was an accident. He was airsick, or maybe he was coming down with the flu or something. Anyway, he got off the plane for the layover and was too sick to get back on. He was looking through his bag for his boarding pass to get it changed out, and he realized he didn't have my envelope. And he said he remembered you had the exact same bag, a black Toomey messenger bag. And he realized he stuffed the yellow envelope into your bag by mistake in his rush to deplane. He said your bag was laying on the floor between the seats just like his, so he called and told me. He said when he thought about it, he knew exactly what happened. He thought maybe I could meet you when you got off the plane, but I didn't get his message in time. And then he was dead. What are the chances, right?
Probably pretty good, considering the circumstances. How'd your brother find out?
He was with me when I played the message back. How was I to know he'd be such an asshole?
You told him about the photo with the code?
I'd had a couple appletinis, Brenda said. I get chatty.
I love them appletinis, Lula said. I could drink a gallon of them.
Over to the sink, Brenda said to me. You're done processing. This is gonna be awesome.
I'm always amazed at the way life plays out. How so often a single decision sets people on an irreversible journey. Richard Crick agreed to do a simple favor for a friend, and it led to his death. and the whole ugly chain of events was set in motion when Bernie Schwartz borrowed money from Sammy the Pig. And what was the ultimate result? Highlights from Brenda. When your hair is wet, you really can't see exactly what the hairdresser from hell has given you. So when I left the shampoo sink and sat in the styling chair, there was hope. By the time my hair was blow-dried, ratted up, and sprayed, I was ready for serious alcohol consumption. The highlights were brilliant red and yellow. My hair looked like it had exploded out of my head, and I was at least 6 inches taller. Brenda had tears in her eyes.
"This is the most fabulous thing I've ever done," she said. "I'm gonna call it Route One Sunrise."
"I've never seen anything like it," Lula said. "This here takes her to a whole other level. She's not just another ordinary bitch no more. She's like super bitch. She's like got fire hair."
"And you see how I gave her hair some lift," Brenda said. "It gives her style some drama."
"I could see that," Lula said.
"What do you think?" Brenda asked me.
"I'm speechless," I said. Brenda put her hand over her heart.
"My pleasure. I'm glad I could help you."
Lula and I left the salon and climbed into the truck. I got behind the wheel, and my hair stuck to the roof. "I can't drive like this," I said. "My hair's stuck."
"You need a bigger vehicle to go with your new look," Lula said.
I slouched in my seat and drove to the edge of the lot where Brenda couldn't see me. I took a brush out of my bag and worked at my hair.
"I can't get the brush to go through it," I said to Lula. "That's the way hair's supposed to be when it got some body. She kicked your hair up a notch. Wham!"
"You might want to dial back on the wham thing," I told her. "I'm not in the mood."
"How could you be Miss Cranky Pants when you got hair like that?"
"This is not my kind of hair."
"Yeah, but it could be. It could be a whole new you."
I didn't want a new me. I still hadn't figured out the old me. Chapter 24. I was still idling in the shopping center lot trying to squash my hair when Morelli called on my cell phone.
"I finally caught up with Berger," he said. "They've been reviewing security tapes from LAX, and they have Razzle Dazzle on one of them. There were no cameras in the vicinity of the crime scene, but they have Raz leaving your gate area. They checked the plane manifest, and two passengers didn't reboard at LAX. Crick and a Somali national, Archie Ahmed."
"Archie Ahmed? Is that Razzle Dazzle?"
"Yeah, apparently Raz has something like 64 identities. The Somali government uses him as an operative. Everything from running guns to recruitment to wet work. They probably drop a stack of passports off to him once a month." "Berger got tapes from Honolulu International and identified Raz going through security. It looks like he was on your plane."
"I don't remember him."
"Put a hat on him and he might look human," Morelli said.
"Did Berger say anything about his source? I mean, how did he know about the photograph?"
"Information from an overseas operative that a courier had passed a photo to you. Berger is going on the assumption that it's a photo of a hacker the FBI has been looking for."
"Wonderful. Anything else?"
"Be careful."
I took Route 1 back to Trenton. I turned off Broad and parked in front of the Bond's office. Lancer and Slasher were across the street, sound asleep in the Lincoln. Connie was inside at her desk, wearing a disposable surgical mask. "What's with the mask?" I asked her.
"This office reeks," Connie said. "I don't know what's wrong with it."
Lula tipped her head back and sniffed.
"Rat fart," she said. "They probably got into the deli dumpster. Smells like they've been eating sauerkraut."
"You're an expert on this?" I asked her.
"I know a rat fart when I smell one, and there's more than one rat farting up there. You probably got a rat condo over you. Personally, I don't like rats. They got those beady eyes and skinny tails, and they give you the plague."
Connie was staring at my hair.
"Speaking of rats' nests..."
"Brenda thought I needed to glam up," I said to Connie.
"It looked good before Miss Prim and Proper here tried to comb it," Lula said. "She ruined the dramatic effect of the line."
"I like the color," Connie said.
"It's Brenda's specialty," Lula said. "It's called Route One Sunrise."
Connie adjusted her mask.
"It takes the attention away from the black eye."
"I'm leaving," I said. "The rat farts are getting to me." I turned to Lula. "I'm going after Magpie tonight. Are you in?"
"Hell yeah. And if we get done early enough, we could go to a club and test drive your hair."
Oh, boy.
It took half a bottle of detangler and 2 sheets of downy fabric softener to untease my hair. I showered and dressed in jeans and a black t-shirt, my thinking being not to compete clothes-wise with Route 1 Sunrise. At 7:30, I grabbed my bag and a black hooded sweatshirt and went to the lobby to wait for Lula. Ordinarily, I'd wait outside, but Raz was still at large, and I didn't want a chance running into him in the dark. Lula's Firebird cruised up to the door, and I jumped in.
"Where are we going?"
Lula looked over at me. "All Saints Cemetery. It's behind the big Catholic church on Nottingham."
"I know that cemetery. It's real pretty. It's got hills and woods and shit."
20 minutes later, Lula pulled into the church parking lot, cut her lights, and crept to the back of the lot where a single-lane road led into the cemetery. We got out of the Firebird and stood for a moment, letting our eyes adjust to the darkness.
"I smell campfire," Lula said. "Magpie's out there heating his beans like a hobo."
I had cuffs stuck into my back pocket, stun gun in my sweatshirt pocket, Glock in my bag. I was carrying a mag light, but I didn't want to use it and spook Magpie. There was a sliver of moon behind broken clouds, enough light to see 3 feet in front, but not much more. The church was lit from the front. The rear was dark, as was the graveyard.
"This is creepy," Lula whispered, following close behind me. "I don't like walking around cemeteries at night. All the ghosts come out at night. I can feel them breathing on me."
We were deep into the cemetery when a set of headlights flashed into the parking lot and instantly blinked out. Lancer and Slasher, I thought. In a strange way, it was comforting. We were following the road, and I could see a dark shape ahead. Something large. Magpie's Crown Vic. Beyond the Vic, I could hear the crackle of wood burning and see the occasional red ember float skyward. This wasn't the first time I'd captured Magpie. We had a fairly cordial relationship, all things considered. He wasn't a violent person. I stepped around the Vic and called out to Magpie. "Hey, Magpie," I said. "It's Stephanie Plum." His fire was small, just enough to heat a can of beans or roast a hot dog. Magpie wasn't a big guy. He was 5'5 and slim, definitely entranced by all things shiny and very clever at stealing them. When his treasures exceeded his storage space, he'd sell them off for whatever he could get. Magpie looked past his campfire at us.
"How'd you find me?"
"Lucky break," I said. "You have a nice spot here."
"It's one of my favorites. It's so peaceful."
He was wearing the usual, baggy jeans, a plaid flannel shirt, and about $30,000 worth of gold chains.
"You missed your court date," I said to him.
"Are you sure?"
"Yep. You have to go back with me to reschedule. You've already eaten dinner, right?"
"Yes. I was just enjoying the fire."
"It's a real nice fire," Lula said. "Keep the spooks and ghouls away. And by the way, those are some lovely necklaces you're wearing. Not everyone understands the importance of accessorizing correctly."
"I have a whole trunk full," Magpie said. "I can't wear them all at the same time. They get too heavy. You can have some if you want."
"Thanks," I told him. "That's nice of you, but we can't take any. I'll put the cuffs on you, and Lula and I can put the fire out, and then we'll go into town. Do you want to ride in the Vic with me, or do you want to ride in Lula's Firebird?"
"The Firebird?"
I was about to cuff Magpie when Raz jumped out of the shadows, knife raised. He looked certifiably crazy in the moonlight, bonfire flames reflected in his eyes. His hair was all Wild Man of Borneo.
"Eee!" Lula shrieked. "It's a devil! It's Satan!"
Magpie's eyes went wide, rolled back into his head, and he crashed over in a dead faint. "It's not Satan," I said to Lula. "It's Razzle Dazzle." Raz lunged at me.
"Bitch whore, I burn you good with fire stick until you tell me."
"Hey, what'd you call her?"
Lula said, hand on hip, lower lip stuck out.
"You better be careful what you call her. We don't put up with none of that shit talk."
He glared at Lula.
"You shut pie hole, or I carve you like pig roast."
"Was that just insulted?"
Lula narrowed her eyes.
"Did he compare me to a roast pig? 'Cause I don't like being compared to a pig. And what's with the knife? I mean, who uses a knife these days?"
Raz held his knife in his right hand and pulled a semi-automatic out of his pants with his left hand.
"I also got big gun," he said to Lula. "I shoot you an eye and then I slice you and make bacon and cook you in fire."
And he squeezed off a shot.
"Run for it," Lula yelled. "He got a gun. Satan's got a gun."
Lula took off and was immediately swallowed up in the black night. She crashed through shrubs, smacking into who knows what on her way to the parking lot, her voice carrying back to me.
Ow, shit, son of a bitch!
Raz turned the gun on me and fired. I jumped behind a tombstone. He fired again, and the bullet pinged off the marble. I bolted for a small patch of woods directly behind me. I had my gun in my bag, but no time to search for it. I saw him stumble forward, lit by the campfire. He was hampered by a bullet wound in one leg and a knife wound in the other. I carefully walked toward the ambient light originating from the front of the church, avoiding the road. I could hear Raz shuffling behind me.
"Here, kitty, kitty," he called. "I come get you, kitty."
An engine cranked over, lights flashed at the top of the hill, and Magpie's Crown Vic roared down the road, crossed the parking lot, and disappeared for parts unknown, presumably taking a revived Magpie with it. My feet wanted to run, but my brain insisted I go slow. I couldn't chance running into a tree or a tombstone in the dark and knocking myself out. I'd managed to find my gun in my bag and had it in hand. I was almost to the lot. I could see the two parked cars. I no longer heard Lula in front of me or Raz behind me, just the sound of my heart thudding in my chest. As I exited the wooded area, I saw Lula move in front of a car and wave at me, and I broke into a sprint across the stretch of open field. I reached Lula and bent at the waist to catch my breath. I glanced at the Camry next to Lula's Firebird.
"Is this his car?" I asked her.
"Looks like it. There's no one in it. There's an extra clip for his gun on the front seat."
I shot two rounds into each tire. Lula and I hustled into the Firebird, and she drove out of the lot onto the road and sat at idle. I called Berger and got him on his cell. I told him Raz was in the cemetery and his car was disabled.
"You gotta admit, he did sort of look like Satan in the beginning there," Lula said.
"You freaked. You were squealing like a little girl."
"I got caught by surprise, and I was affected by the atmosphere. You know how I'm all sensitive to that shit."
"You yelled, 'Run for it.' What the heck was that?"
"That was smart," Lula said. "He was going to make me into bacon. He's a maniac. Good thing he can't shoot for snot with his left hand."
I agreed. He was definitely a maniac, and he definitely couldn't shoot left-handed. "I want to stay here and wait for the police to arrive," I said. "I don't want to chance Raz somehow driving away. I want him caught."
"Sure. Just keep your eyes open for him sneaking up on us, and keep your gun out. I'm not being no breakfast meat."
After a couple minutes, I thought I saw Raz navigate the open grass to his car. I was sure he'd heard the shots. If it was me, I'd immediately check the tires. I couldn't see him in the dark lot. He had the window down, listening for footfalls. Lula and I had guns drawn.
"Bitching bitches," carried out to us. "He looked at the tires," Lula said.
I saw lights on the road behind us, and a cop car drove up and turned into the lot. It was followed by two more police cars and a sedan with a Kojak light. My cell phone rang. It was Berger.
"Is that you sitting out on the road in a Firebird?"
he asked. "Yes. I put a couple rounds in his tires, so he's on foot. He's not far away. I saw him go to his car a couple minutes ago. He's armed."
"Thanks," Berger said. "We'll take it from here." "Do you want to stay around and see what happens?" Lula asked.
"No. I want to go home. Truth is, I was afraid if I stayed in the area, Raz might circle around and come back and shoot me." Chapter 25. Lula pulled into my lot to drop me off, and we spotted Brenda's car.
"That's Brenda's toaster," she said, "and it looks like Brenda waiting for you at the door, and she don't look good."
Brenda was hunched, arms wrapped around herself, head down. Lula cut the engine, and we went to where Brenda was standing, chain-smoking, the butts littering the ground around her.
"What's up?" I asked her.
"I have terrible problems. I need you to help me. I don't know who else to ask. It's my son, Jason. He's been kidnapped. I was there when they grabbed him and dragged him away."
"Oh my gosh," I said. "That's serious. Did you call the police?"
"I can't. There are circumstances."
"Such as?"
"The police are sort of looking for Jason," Brenda said. "It's not like he's done anything bad. I mean, he hasn't killed anyone or anything."
"What has he done?"
Brenda lit up another cigarette. Now she had two going at the same time.
"He's a hacker," she said.
I know about them, Lula said. They go around giving people a virus, and they steal Sarah Palin's email.
Jason isn't that kind of a hacker, Brenda said. He would never do anything mean. He's just interested in the technology. He says it's like a chess game, and he's playing the computer. He's really smart. He's a genius.
So why do the police want him if he hasn't done anything wrong? I asked.
He has a couple friends who are just like him. It's like a geek club. I guess for giggles, they break into government computers and leave funny messages. They don't take information out, but the government doesn't like when their systems get hacked.
The government got no sense of humor, Lula said.
Anyway, Jason and his friends went underground a year ago. Jason says they aren't leaving any more funny messages, but the FBI is still looking for them. The thing is, the FBI doesn't know who they are or what they look like, so if Jason keeps a low profile, he might be okay.
I took a step back to get away from the smoke cloud surrounding Brenda. Jason is the friend who sent you the photograph from Hawaii, isn't he?
He was trying to help me get my car. He's such a good boy.
Do you know enough about computers to use the photograph? I asked her.
No, Jason has a friend here who was going to help me.
Sounds to me like Jason come home, Lula said. Why'd he do that if the FBI is looking for him? Why didn't he just send you another photograph?
When poor Richie got killed and we found out Razzle Dazzle was involved, Jason knew he was in danger and had to move. Razzle Dazzle has been chasing after Jason for over a year. There are terrorists who would love to get their hands on Jason, and Razzle Dazzle would deliver Jason to them.
I'm confused, Lula said. Why did this Razzle guy want the photograph? Why didn't he just go get Jason?
Raz only knows Jason by his electronic imprint. I don't know what that means. Jason says Raz is like a stupid hacker. Eventually, Raz tracks Jason down, but he doesn't know his human identity or what he looks like. I think Raz thought Richie had a picture of Jason. I don't think he knew about the code. At least that's what Jason thinks. So since Jason had to leave Hawaii anyway, he came home for a couple days to help me get my car and to visit with me. He was supposed to fly out tomorrow, but he got kidnapped.
My heart did a flip in my chest. Razzle Dazzle?
No, my brother has him. Jason and I were eating dinner, and my asshole brother came in with his two thugs and snatched him. I don't know how he knew Jason was here. Maybe he heard Sammy the pig had his car stolen and put it together.
Okay, I could breathe again. At least your brother won't hurt Jason.
No, but Chester could hold Jason hostage until he agrees to show him how to hack into who knows what. And then Jason could be implicated in a crime. Or if Jason stays here too long, Razzle Dazzle or the FBI might find him. I thought of you because you grab people all the time. I was hoping you'd help me. I figured Chester has Jason at the warehouse.
Brenda squinted at me through the smoke haze.
What happened to your hair? It's all flat and back in a ponytail.
Rain, I said. I got caught in the rain.
I didn't see any rain.
It must have been a rogue cloud. It drifted over me and whoosh, there was a downpour.
So are we going to stage a big rescue? Lula asked me. We going in with guns blazing? I would have worn my ranger outfit if I'd known.
Lula had forsaken the black for gold. Gold tank top, hot pink short spandex skirt, gold spike-heeled shoes. It was a wonder Razzle hadn't taken her out with one shot. She made a really good target. We'll go in with guns not blazing, I said. These aren't hardened criminals.
Chester might be a little hardened, Brenda said.
You hear that? Lula said to me. A little hardened. No telling what we can expect. That means we need to take my Firebird on account of I got extra ammo in my trunk.
Extra ammo might be good, Brenda said. You can never have too much ammo.
We piled into Lula's Firebird, and I called Ranger when we reached Broad. Checking in, I said to him. I'm off the radar because I'm in Lula's car, but I wanted you to know I'm making sort of a mercy illegal capture just north of Bordentown. I might need help.
Babe, you're not off the radar. You're wearing my watch. I know exactly where you are.
I looked down at the watch. I forgot.
I'll have someone follow you. Let me know if you want him to go in.
Thanks.
It's good to have a ranger, Lula said. He's like a personal Spidey.
Lula hesitated when she got to the Billings warehouse lot. There were two cars parked. One was the bashed-in Lincoln. The other car was a Mercedes. Lights were on inside the building in the office area.
What's the plan? Lula wanted to know. We can't be selling Girl Scout cookies out here. Girl Scouts are supposed to be in bed by now.
Park at the back edge where the Firebird won't be so visible, I told her. We'll try the front door. If that doesn't work, we'll see if we can get in through the loading dock. Lula parked, and we all got out.
Hold on, Lula said. I'll get my ammo.
I pulled my Glock out of my bag. I really don't think we need extra.
Yeah, but this is good,
Lula said, opening her trunk. I looked inside and stopped breathing for a beat. That's a rocket launcher.
Yep, Lula said. It's the big boy. I got it at a yard sale in the projects. It's loaded for bear, too. See that mother stuck onto the end of it? It goes kaboom.
No rocket launchers, I told her. Absolutely no rocket launchers. This isn't Afghanistan.
We don't have to use it,
Lula said.
We just knock on their door and show them this bitch. Then they wet their pants and hand over Jason.
It could work, Brenda said. I almost wet my pants seeing it in the trunk.
She had a point. I had to admit, I had a moment when I first saw it. I guess it might be okay, as long as we only use it to scare them.
Show and tell,
Lula said. Lula shouldered her rocket launcher. I had my hand wrapped around my Glock, and Brenda had her cute little girl gun. We marched up to the front door of Billings Gourmet Food, and I tried the doorknob. Locked. We circled the building and tried the loading dock gates and the roll-up garage doors. All locked.
I'm not going home without Jason, Brenda said. I'm going in.
Me too, Lula said. I'm right behind you.
How are you going in? I asked them. Brenda set off for the office entrance.
The front door. I'm going to ring the bell and ask for Jason.
And if they won't give him to us, I'll shoot a rocket up their ass,
Lula said, following her. I had to run to catch up, and I checked the parking lot on the way. I didn't see a range man vehicle. Not good, I thought. This smelled like disaster. Brenda went straight to the door and put her finger to the bell. After a couple minutes, the door opened, and Lancer looked out.
Oh, shit, Lancer said.
He tried to close the door, but I already had my foot in it.
Where's Jason? Brenda asked. I want my son.
I don't know, Lancer said. He's not here.
Brenda pushed past him into the office.
Of course he's here. Where else would he be? My sister-in-law wouldn't put up with him in her house.
Hey, Lancer said, you can't come in here. It's not office hours.
Lula shoved past him, close on Brenda's heels.
Excuse us, out of our way, Lula said.
Lancer eyeballed the rocket launcher and turned white.
I'm gonna have to get tough now. I'm gonna have to force you to leave. Do you got one of these babies?
Lula asked him, patting the rocket launcher.
No. Then how are you gonna force us to leave? I have a gun, Lancer said,
and he pointed his gun at Lula.
I don't like it when people point a gun at me, Lula said. It makes me nervous, and it's rude. Do you see me pointing my rocket launcher at you? I don't think so. It's rude to break into people's private property, Lancer said.
It's rude to kidnap my son, Brenda said.
We were in a small lobby. A hall led off to the right.
I bet you have him down here,
Brenda said, moving along the hall, little girly gun held out in front of her. Lula followed Brenda. Lancer followed Lula, and I followed Lancer. Brenda opened a door and looked inside.
Warehouse,
she said, and she moved on. I did a fast scan of the cavernous space. Rows of boxes stacked one on another. Gallon tins of olive oil on wire shelves. More boxes. An 18-wheeler in the garage area. No Jason. Brenda opened a door at the far end of the hall and yelped.
Jason!
We all ran down the hall and looked into the room. Jason was working on his laptop. Slasher and another man were slouched into a couch watching a small television.
I'm sorry, boss, Lancer said. I couldn't stop him. What do you mean you couldn't stop him? The man said. You have a gun, don't you? Shoot him.
Lancer hesitated. The man stood, pulled a gun, and pointed it at Jason.
How about this, Brenda? How about I shoot your kid if you don't go home? He's doing good stuff for us here, so I'll only shoot him in the leg.
Brenda narrowed her eyes.
Chester, you bastard. If anyone's gonna get shot, it's gonna be you.
And before anyone could move, she fired on Chester, tagging him in the arm.
Kill her,
Chester yelled.
Kill her!
Lancer trained his gun on Brenda, and I tackled him from behind. We went to the floor, and his gun discharged two rounds. One zinged past Lula, and the second cut off 2 inches from her 4-inch stiletto heel.
What the heck? Lula said, toppling over, off balance from the 2-inch heel difference. I'm hit, she yelled. The asshole shot me. Woman down, call 911.
You're fine, I said to her. You just fell off your shoe.
I see darkness, Lula said. It's closing in on me. There's a tunnel of light. I see angels. No, wait a minute. There's no angels. Shit, it's Tony Soprano.
It wasn't Tony Soprano. It was Chester Billings roaring like a wounded bull elephant charging across the room at Lula and Brenda. He knocked the little gun out of Brenda's hand and grabbed the rocket launcher. Somehow in the scuffle, the rocket got launched, whooshing across the room, punching a hole in the far wall, disappearing from view. There was an explosion that rocked the building. Plaster fell from the ceiling. Everyone was yelling and scrambling for cover. A second smaller explosion rattled furniture, and I could see flames lick through the hole made by the rocket.
Fire in the warehouse, Lancer said. The rocket must have hit a propane tank.
Smoke poured into the windowless room, and there was a rush to evacuate. Everyone ran into the hall and scattered. Lancer, Slasher, and Billings ran in one direction. Lula, Brenda, and Jason ran in another. I was the last out of the room. I stepped into the hall, and the lights blinked off. I was confused in the dark, choking on the smoke. An arm wrapped around me, nearly lifting me off my feet, moving me in the opposite direction. It was Ranger.
This way,
he said, pushing me down the hall to a fire door. He shoved the door open, and we were out of the building. I could hear emergency vehicles screaming on the approach road.
How many people were in the building? Ranger asked.
6, plus me. Ranger was connected to Tank in the other SUV.
Talk to me, Ranger said.
I could hear Tank on speakerphone.
Lula disappeared into the woods behind us. I shouted at her, but she kept going. 5 more people came out of the building and scattered. A woman and a young guy panicked and ran in opposite directions when a flaming chunk of roof landed next to them. The woman is hiding behind the dumpster. We tried to get her, but she shot at us. The guy is out there somewhere. Looked like he had a computer. 3 men jumped into a Mercedes and took off.
Everyone's out of the building, Ranger said to me. Let's move, unless you want to talk to the police.
No. He grabbed my hand and pulled me at a flat-out run across the lot, over a grassy median that separated Billings Gourmet Food from the neighboring business, Dot Plumbing. 2 Rangeman SUVs sat at idle in the shadow of the Dot building. Ranger got behind the wheel of one, and the second followed us to the edge of the lot, lights off. Flames were shooting from the top of the Billings warehouse. Police cars slid to a stop in the lot. Fire trucks rumbled in. Did you call the fire and police? I asked Ranger.
No, I didn't have to. The explosion blew the roof off the building. It could be seen for miles. And my control room heard the fire alert go in from Billings' security system.
I don't see Lula's car in the lot.
I had Hal move it. He's on the road in front of us.
Ranger pulled onto the service road, and Lula jumped out of a clump of bushes, waving her arms and yelling. She was one shoe on and one shoe off. Leaves were stuck in her soot-smudged pink hair, and her gold sequin tank top was blinding in Ranger's headlights.
It's Lula Sunshine, Ranger said, stopping to let her jump into the SUV. Holy cow, holy crap, holy moly, Lula said. That was freaking scary, and look what that idiot did to my shoe. These are genuine Louboutin knockoffs. Where am I going to get another shoe to match this?
Ranger turned onto Route 295, and Lula sat forward in her seat.
What about my car? Lula asked. We can't leave my baby here. It'll get ashes all over it. That sucker went up like a, what do you call it, a inferno.
Hal has the Firebird, Ranger said. He's taking it back to Trenton.
Really? Wow. Hal's a sweetie, Lula said. I'm going to have to do something real nice for him.
The corners of Ranger's mouth twitched into a small smile. Gutterhead, I said to him. That turned the twitch to a full-on smile. A police car blew past us, lights flashing. Lula had her nose to the window.
I think that was Brenda's kid behind the wheel of the cop car.
A half hour later, Ranger and I were parked in my lot. Lula was gone. She'd retrieved her Firebird and was meeting Hal at a downtown bar to show him her appreciation. Thanks for rescuing me, I said to Ranger.
I sent Hal and Raphael to keep an eye on you, and I went to check on a commercial account in Whitehorse. Raphael called to tell me Lula went in with a rocket launcher, so I skipped Whitehorse. I pulled into the lot seconds before you destroyed Billings Foods.
It was an accident, I said. He looked at my hair.
And?
Professional necessity. I had to get information out of a hairdresser.
I knew the explanation would be worthwhile.
He checked his watch.
I'd like to stay and seduce you, but I have to backtrack to Whitehorse. Someone managed to hack into the alarm system and clean out a computer store we're supposed to be protecting.
I squelched a grimace. I suspected I knew who'd done the hacking. How sophisticated are these hackers? I asked him. Suppose the photograph everyone was looking for had a code hidden in it. Like, could the photo look like Ashton Kutcher, but when you fed it into a computer, it would break down into digital components? And those digital components could be a code a hacker could use to start a car? Is that possible, or is it just fiction?
The technology is real, and it's an increasing threat to my business. They're not so much codes as messages that instruct another computer to perform a function, like starting a car or disabling a security system.
I woke up the next morning thinking about Razzle Dazzle. I had my phone in my hand to call Morelli, and a text message buzzed in from him. I'm in meetings until noon. I'll call later. Raz slipped away last night. Be careful. My equipment was loaded and charged and positioned in my bag for easy access. I stayed vigilant when I crossed the parking lot to my truck, and I drove watching my rear. By the time I got to the bonds office, everyone else was already there. Connie was behind her desk. Lula was perched on a folding chair doing the day's jumble. Vinny was pacing, checking messages on his smartphone. News of the day? I asked.
Vinny just wrote a bond on Brenda, Connie said. There was an explosion at her brother's warehouse and she was arrested on the scene.
They arrested her for just being there? I asked. Did they think she was responsible for the explosion?
No, a defective propane tank apparently exploded, Connie said. I've been listening to police chatter.
Lula looked up from the jumble, rolled her eyes, and made the sign of the cross.
Brenda was there when the police arrived. One thing led to another, and she punched out a cop.
Connie looked up at the ceiling.
Hey, something just dripped on my desk.
We all looked at the ceiling. There were big wet splotches, and it looked like it was buckling.
Lula sniffed. It's a rat. They're leaving themselves, and it's soaking through. There must be a lot of them. When I was a hoe, I used to do business out of a Chinese restaurant, and they had this problem. It used to drip into the hot and sour soup.
There's no rats, Vinny said. There's probably a busted pipe. Somebody call the landlord.
I know rats when I smell them, Lula said. And there's rats.
She got a broom from the corner and poked the ceiling.
Shoo!
The minute the broom made contact with the ceiling, a piece of the ceiling broke loose and fell onto Connie's desk. A crack opened up above us, and there were some smooshy, groaning sounds. The crack stretched the length of the room, the ceiling sagged, the crack gaped open, and about 1,000 rats poured down on us. Big rats, small rats, fat rats, startled rats, bug-eyed and squealing, nasty little rat feet treading air, tails stiff as a stick. They thudded onto Connie's desk and the floor, stunned for a second, and then up and running.
Rats! Lula shrieked. It's raining rats!
She climbed onto her chair and covered her head with the jumble. Connie was on her desk, punting rats across the room like they were footballs.
Someone open the door so they can get out, she yelled.
I was afraid to move for fear of stepping on a rat and pissing him off. I think I was screaming, but I don't remember hearing myself.
Vinny lunged for the door, bolted out, and the rats rushed after him.
Minutes later, we were on the sidewalk, looking in at the office. Most of the rats had departed for parts unknown. A few rats, too dumb to find the door, were hunkered down in corners.
I feel like I got rat cooties, Lula said. I bet I got fleas, and I think one of them bit me on the ankle.
I examined Lula's ankles. No bite marks.
It must have been one of those bites that don't show, Lula said, on account of I'm coming down with something. I can feel it. Lord, I hope it's not the plague. I don't want the plague. You break out in them boo-boos when you got the plague.
I don't see any boo-boos on you, I told her.
Well, it's still early, Lula said.
Better boo-boos than buggy, I thought, hiking my bag onto my shoulder. I'm heading out. I'm going to look for Magpie.
I'll go with you, Lula said. Only I got to get something to settle my stomach. I got to keep my strength up in case I get the plague. I need chicken.
I cruised into the cluck-in-a-bucket drive-thru, and Lula got a bucket of extra crispy, a bag of biscuits with dipping gravy, an apple pie, and a large diet root beer. I helped myself to a piece of chicken, and I got a text message from Brenda. Thanks for everything. I'll send you the formula for your hair. I texted her back and asked if she was at the salon and could she do my hair. Negative, she texted. Arrivederci. Change of plans, I said to Lula. Brenda's running.
How do you know?
I just know. I'm going to see if I can talk her out of it. 40 minutes later, I was about to turn off Route 1 into Brenda's neighborhood when her toaster zipped out in front of me. There were 4 cars between us, but I knew it was Brenda.
You want me to call her? Lula asked.
No, let's see where she's going. She took Route 1 to Route 18 and got onto the turnpike heading north. It was clear where she was going. She was going to the airport, and Jason was in the car with her.
Maybe she's just taking her kid, Lula said. He's still hiding, right?
It's possible. I followed her to the short-term parking garage and watched from a distance while she took suitcases out of the Scion. They walked toward the terminal, dragging their luggage. It didn't look to me like she even bothered to lock the car. I knew she was jumping bail. I found a parking place, and Lula and I hustled to catch up with Brenda. A man was a short distance away, walking toward us. He was carrying a suitor, looking very tanned. It was the rug, Simon Raguzzi, the skip responsible for all my problems in Hawaii. Our eyes met, and he dropped the suitor and took off. Brenda was worth loose change to Vinny. The rug was worth big bucks. I changed course in the middle of the parking garage and ran for Raguzzi. I could hear Lula clattering in her heels behind me, and I was gaining on the guy in front of me. I got to within a couple feet of him, took a flying leap, and grabbed his pants cuffs. He went to the ground, and Lula rushed over and sat on him. I cuffed him and dragged him to his feet. "How'd you know to run?" I asked him.
"You're famous," he said. "I saw you on the side of a bus in an ad for the bonds office."
Vinny's brilliant idea and not a highlight in my life. I loaded the rug into the back seat and headed back to Trenton. I called Ranger from the road. "I just captured the rug," I told him. "I had a feeling Brenda was going to skip, so I followed her to the airport. I ran into Raguzzi in the parking garage, and Lula and I took him down."
"Babe," Ranger said.
It was late afternoon by the time I met Vinny at the coffee shop. "Sorry about Brenda," I said. "I'm pretty sure she skipped."
"I was counting on it," Vinny said. "She put her Ferrari up for bond. Now I can give it to D'Angelo."
"It's hot," I told him, "and it doesn't come with keys."
"Don't care," Vinny said. "That's D'Angelo's problem. I'll send it to him on a flatbed."
I got a Frappuccino and got into my truck. Magpie would wait for another day. Truth is, I was rolling in money for my Raguzzi capture. I stopped at my parents' house on the way home.
"Looks like you tore the knees out of your jeans," Grandma said.
I followed her into the kitchen. "Occupational hazard." "Are you staying for dinner?" my mom asked. "No, I need to go home and take a shower and change my clothes." I'd been pelted by rats. Plus, I'd skittered across about 5 feet of cement when I tackled the rug. I didn't think she wanted to know the details. "I was hoping I could mooch some sandwich stuff from you. I need to go shopping, but I didn't want to go into Giovacchini's with this hair and the skin knees, and my black eye is turning green."
"Green is good," Grandma said. "That's one of the last colors."
My mom fixed a bag of food for me and handed it over. She went to the cupboard where she kept her liquor stash, pulled out a photograph, and held it up. It was the photograph from the plane. "Your grandmother had this in her room," she said. "I know you were looking for it. I found it when I went in to change the linens today."
"The guy in the photo is a hottie," Grandma said. "I pulled it out of the garbage. I didn't know you wanted it."
I tucked the photo into the food bag. I'd give it to Ranger for safekeeping. Or maybe for giggles, I'd give it to Burger. He'd think he finally had a picture of the hacker he'd been after. As far as I knew, Berger and Razzle Dazzle didn't know the photo was a composite that hid a computer message. "Gotta go," I said. "Thanks for the food and the photo. I'll find a hot replacement for you, Grandma." Grandma took a little bottle filled with pink stuff off the counter.
"Annie dropped this off for you."
"More Pepto-Bismol?"
"No,
She said this is the real thing.
I'd picked Morelli's SUV out in my parking lot, so I wasn't surprised when I opened my door and Bob bounded up to me. I scratched behind his ears and gave him a kiss on the top of his head. Morelli strolled in from the living room. The television was on. Suppose I came home with some hot guy and you were here in your socks watching television, I said.
It would be awkward.
I set the bag on the counter and unpacked.
Looks like you stopped off at your mom's house, Morelli said. Oh, man, is that chocolate cake?
Yes, and I have some sandwich stuff. Are you hungry?
Starved.
He opened a plastic baggie and snitched a piece of ham.
I have good news for you. Burger got Raz.
Get out.
Actually, he was dead by the time he got him, but he got him all the same.
Morelli opened another baggie.
Corned beef. This is the mother load.
How did Raz get dead?
He escaped from the cemetery, but he stole a car sometime during the night, and this morning one of Trenton's finest spotted him. There was a chase, Raz lost control of his car and hit a bridge abutment.
Jeez. He looked down at my knees.
I heard you brought the rug in. Looks like you tackled him.
Yeah, I should take a shower. The blood's caking.
I could help with the shower.
He put the corned beef down and picked up Annie's little bottle.
Your mom thinks of everything. I've had heartburn all day.
He unscrewed the bottle and drank it before I could stop him. I stared at him. How do you feel? I asked. He thought for a moment.
Better,
he finally said.
Warm.
His eyes got dark and soft, and the corners of his mouth tipped into a smile.
Very friendly.
He reached out for me and pulled me into him.
Come here, cupcake.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Explosive 18, a Stephanie Plum novel by Janet Ivanovich. This program was read by Lorelei King. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2011 by Ivanovich Inc. Production copyright 2011, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.